Before we begin the radio program, permit me to share with you a quote from one Phil Johnson of Grace to You, who told me years ago, God's people are very generous. And wow, have I found that to be true so many times I have lost count. God's people are so generous, and you have been so kind to us. And I'm pausing the program just for a moment to ask you to please consider being kind to us again, because we can't do anything that we do at Fortis Institute without our gospel partners. That's how we see the people who support us financially. We can't go down in the well unless you hold the rope. So if you have the ability once again to hold the rope, or if you have never been a gospel partner and supported us, we've got a matching gift campaign. You can double your impact. This is such a crucial time of year. So if you would be so kind, please visit fortisinstitute.org/donate.
Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
We've had 35 resurrections of the dead. The closer they are to freshly dead, the easier they are to resurrect.
So I see this giant angel and I asked him his name. It's a financial company. And I realized this angel is here for our finances.
And that's a true literal story, by the way.
These people are charlatans. And it's about time we draw a line in the sand and stop fraternizing with the wolves.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Here we go.
It's the Wretched Radio Mail Call Delivery Bag Q&A Infotainment Nationwide Extravaganza, featuring your voicemails, correspondences, communiques, dispatches, memorandums, and missives.
Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country.
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Now here's your host, Todd Freakishly Tall Friel.
The mail is here!
Ooh, this is Wretched Radio. There you sit, staring at a computer screen with your mouth agape. It's something so wretched, you ask, what am I to do with this? The answer is, send it to us, idea@wretched.org. Whatever is wretched, we want it. You can also question, comment, have a conundrum, got a comment, want a snark? Text away, 877-282-2337.
Did you say agape?
I said agape.
You reading your thesaurus?
Yes. Okay. Jimmy,
yes.
Can you give me another word for thesaurus? Oh, see what I did there? I don't think you can.
Let me check my thesaurus.
Okay, fine. 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Laura. Todd, have you ever addressed Molinism?
Yes.
Do you agree with it?
No.
Okay, moving on.
All righty then. It's not Alfred Molina. He's an actor. It was a Jesuit priest, 16th century. He was a Roman Catholic who came up with a way to, in his opinion, defend sovereignty and human free will. Usually these attempts, in my estimation, I don't understand why the desire for free will is such a big deal to people. I don't get it. Because my thinking about my free will is I don't want my will to be free. I want my will underneath the sovereign control of God. I want to be thinking exactly the way he wants me to think, doing exactly what he wants me to do. I don't need autonomy. I don't need a free will. That's just how I see it. So Molina, not the actor, but the Jesuit, said the middle view, known as Molinism, his last name was Molina, so it's Molinism. It's a middle view. It gets a little bit complicated, to be honest, and it involves biblical support of counterfactuals. It's understanding natural knowledge. But basically, men make actual, genuine choices, free will choices, and God is sovereignly control everything with his middle knowledge. This is a reduction, but nevertheless, rather than ordaining and determining all things, God knows all possibilities and all potential outcomes. And he then works inside of his middle knowledge to bring about that which he wills. There are those who would say this compromises sovereignty, and I would join that choir. That is simply not the way the Bible presents God's knowledge and will. He is orchestrating all things. He's upholding the universe from the word, through the word of his power. He knows the end from the beginning. God is orchestrating all things, and he's not responding in any way. And now, this doesn't mean you don't make genuine choices. You do make genuine choices. The problem is our wills are so bent toward evil that we don't make the right or good choices, and we certainly don't make a choice to be saved. That's God's salvific work. So the middle view, there would be a few people, I think, online that would call it a heresy. There are other good Christians who would say it's not, it's within the scope of understanding how it's a philosophical system, how God operates in the world. My big issue with it, and by the way, it's William Lane Craig, Alvin Plantinga are the two biggest proponents of the middle view. I know that they would argue, actually, the Molinist would say that this is actually a more sovereign view than the sovereign view, because God knows all possibilities. He creates the world with the possibilities happening that align with his will. So that's like even more than sovereign. I don't agree. I see sovereignty as God ordaining all things and bringing things about as he wills, orchestrating all details. That's Molinism in a nutshell. If you would like to correct my understanding, you can send an email to idea@wretched.org or text away 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Anonymous, texted in. Todd, what is the difference between the heart and the soul?
The heart and the soul. I think I asked Greg Giffert this question when he was in doing his presentation, Life Without the Numb, which we're going to be releasing some year. His book's got to come out first. There seems to be a distinction, but I think they could also be considered synonyms, that your heart is the inner man. Your soul is what animates you. But Greg would say there's a slight, there's shadings. I guess I think more along the line of synonym, your inner man, your soul, or your spirit. That's who you are. You're not your brain. You find another word for thesaurus?
Oh, no.
You didn't look?
The big book of words.
That's sure. But I don't think that there's another word for thesaurus.
I'm going to look that up.
Smacks of irony, wouldn't you say? 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Renee. Todd, what do you think about people wearing the ashes of their loved ones?
What?
Wearing the ashes of their loved ones.
Yeah, I heard you.
So there's this trend thing that's going around. I don't know if it's a trend going around, but I've seen it recently where people get these necklaces made that have like little small urns on it. And if someone has been cremated, they wear them around.
Yeah. NAF. Not a fan. Would I say that that's a sin? I don't think we can make laws where there are no laws, but it does speak a word. There's the big difference between burial and cremation is its testimony. What does it say? What are the words that it speaks? Burial says resurrection's a coming. This body, it's going to be made eternal. 1 Corinthians 15, Rexella. It's going to go on for forever. God is going to come to judge the living and the dead, and I'm going to get an eternal body. And that's what burial speaks toward: resurrection, hope of everlasting life. Cremation, which in the Bible doesn't say cremation is a sin, but the Bible does say it was the pagans that practiced cremation. Every instance of burial we have, it comes from Abraham's line, the Jewish people. Again, we don't have a law, but that is the historical narrative, which shows this is the way the Jews did it versus the way the pagans did it via cremation. What does cremation say? Cremation says there's no future plan for the body. And I think, no. Do I think it's a sin to get cremated? No. But I think you need to weigh, what does it say? What do I want to communicate when I am dead to the people who pass by, or to the people who attend my funeral? So putting some, that I would say this though, I think it gets closer to problematic, and I've seen this. I get it, but when people get cremated and then they want to scatter their ashes, And then sometimes they want to scatter parts of their ashes in different places. I think that speaks a more definitive word. I'm not expecting my body to be put back together again. So when it comes to carrying around somebody's body in a vial around your neck, I just think the testimony of that isn't as biblical as it could be. From a personal standpoint, it's like, what am I trying to accomplish with this? I suspect that some people, they must do it because it's like, it keeps that person alive in my memory. It keeps them near to me. And I suspect this would be a world that doesn't grieve and mourn with hope, with an anticipation of seeing that loved one. Or they're just confused about that. This goes back to our heart. What is heart and soul?
Yes.
Okay. You're a body and a soul. You're, but the inner man is what makes you, you were dualistic. You've got a body and a soul. You're not just a body that gets carried around. And that could be a theological implication of carrying around ashes around your neck. Jimmy, would you ever do that?
I wouldn't do it, no.
Would you say that it's a sin?
No, but I think there's some danger in of not allowing yourself to get to the place of moving on, you know, because it keeps that, I don't know. I think it keeps the despair right there.
It could.
And I'm not saying it's true for everyone.
Right. Well, the reality is that those ashes there, that's not the person. That's the person's body. The person's body is their inner man. That's the way the Bible says it, with some different synonyms like heart, like soul, like spirit. But the person that you love is either in the presence of the Lord or locked up, awaiting judgment. That's where your loved one is. And I suspect that is why probably it's Christians that maybe just aren't thinking much about it, that are maybe struggling to mourn through the process appropriately with hope, and an unbeliever trend. I get the sentimentality of it, and I understand why somebody would want to do that when they're in the throes of mourning. But I think biblically, we simply can speak a better word, and there's a better path for healing. This is Wretched Radio.
You know what momentum feels like? When the work you've been doing for years, it starts to reach people you never dreamed you'd reach. That's what 2025 has been for Fortis Institute. We're on over 600 radio stations now, over 120 TV networks. Our Fortis Plus app is streaming on Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, everywhere people are watching. And something we never thought we'd do, we closed the warehouse. Every single resource we have is now completely free. 300,000 Play the Man booklets made it into the hands of students this year. We had 3 campus events attended by students who are hungry for truth. Our Fellows podcasts are all ranking in the top 5% worldwide. Dr. Greg Gifford released his new book, and millions, literally millions, are watching on YouTube. But here's the thing about momentum. It can't coast. You have to keep pushing, and that's why December matters so much. Every gift you give this month is matched dollar for dollar up to $500,000. Go to FortisInstitute.org right now. Give today and double your impact. Let's keep the momentum going.
Is it possible a Christian university can actually be ranked high when it comes to preparing students for the real world? Hat tip to Masters University. You want to send your kids someplace where they actually still teach the Bible? Not just based on a document that they maybe have in a file cabinet someplace, but they actually use the Bible there. The education at the Masters University, not only biblical, but oh so practical. Courses, diplomas, degrees, they can be achieved online or, of course, on their beautiful campus in Southern California. Would you like to learn more about the Masters University to prepare you or your child for the future? I encourage you to visit masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
The fruit of the Spirit is evidence that God is working in us. Every believer will evidence this fruit. But it is important to remember that bearing fruit is a consequence of salvation, not a requirement for salvation. God is working in us and through us, and he is the source of this fruit, not us. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
1-877-282-BEEP. This is Wretched Radio, and that is the number of the old toll-free. You want to text? Please do so. 877-282-2337. I wish we had a better number where it could be a jingle. You know, like 867-5309. Do you think that number's operative? Do you think somebody ever got that number and went, no, they're looking for Tommy Two-Tone, 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Zachary. Todd, my church hosts a block party for the neighborhood twice a year as an evangelism tactic. It involves lots of carnival-like attractions. Didn't we just talk about this? I'd like to noodle through this biblically, and I'm curious what you would think. Is this acceptable or an adiaphora liberty issue?
Yeah, it depends on really what you're doing there. It also depends on what the motivation is and what the theology that is standing behind it. If a church chooses to reach out to the community by doing some sort of an event, I just don't think you can say that's a sin. But to throw a party just for the sake of being nice, I think that's a waste of resources. I think it's a failure to miss the point. And I don't think that the community misses that there's a lack of confidence in your desire to share good news. I'm trying to think of another world religion that has any sort of concern about conversion. Maybe Islam. Their book says, do it by the sword if necessary. The Jewish people don't care about conversion. Buddhists, Hindus, they don't care. But Christianity does. So when we do events, especially with a church, and it's not about a genuine proclamation of the gospel, I think we're communicating a word that is not lost on the unbeliever. Having said that, it's not my preference. If you're going to do such a thing, make sure that it is about the gospel, because I do think that it communicates something. Hey, come and spend time with us because we've got a whoop-de-doo fest. As opposed to, we want you to learn about the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, that just speaks a totally different word. I think we talked about this yesterday with the Easter egg drop business. I think it shows a lack of confidence in our gospel message. I think it's an ecclesiology issue that the church isn't supposed to be used for evangelism per se. Church is for believers. The called out ones, not the people who want their kids to be amused in a bouncy house in an inflatable for an evening. The church is for Christians who get equipped and then go out and proclaim the good news of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So I think it's an ecclesiology problem. I think it's a lack of confidence in our message. I think it's an effort to try to make evangelism easy and not confrontational and just a model nice. Now, having said that, do I think that a church should be in a community doing good things? Sure, we should. We should do it for one another first. That is the ordo amoris, the circles of love. It starts with the family, the household of God. Then it makes its way out. So go ahead and do those things. But let's remember, we're ambassadors for Jesus Christ. It's not about throwing block parties. It's about being on mission with our Savior who came to die for sinners. And by the way, Jimmy.
Yes.
That thing you sent me.
I send you a lot.
No, the thing. Okay. If you weren't with us yesterday, we talked about the Easter egg drop bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And the illustration that I made up on the fly was, it's like the Olympics advertising for other stuff,
right?
But not for athletics. So you put this in the AI machine?
I did.
All right, hold on. I got it right.
I'm trying to strengthen your illustrations.
Well, this does. Okay, you should. Do you have it still?
Yes, I do.
Oh, good. You do it because it says announcer over the top sports hype tone.
You can do a better job.
Ladies and gentlemen, get pumped. The Olympics are back. That's capital B, capital A, capital C, capital K, exclamation point. Watch athletes walk briskly through stadiums wearing matching track suits. Join us for popcorn stands, commemorative towel giveaways, and the largest fireworks display this side of Peoria. There might even be a few people. Sports. That's the line, right? See? And oh, yeah, the Jesus story. Yeah, we're going to toss. Yeah. Got the face painting and whoop-de-doo and Easter eggs and catch all the action live where athleticism kind of sort of might happen. And oh, yeah, somewhere in there, medals will be awarded, probably, we think. Stay tuned. The 2025 Olympic Festival, trademarked, because who needs competition when you've got cotton candy?
That's it. Easter eggs.
That's pretty much it right there. 877-282-2337.
All right. So now this, from one of your favorite subjects to another, this is from Zoe. Todd, my local church lacks elders. Although we have a pastor and a few men who could fulfill the role of an elder, there are no official ones. The service of preparing elders is non-existent. I lament to say that many of the pastoral duties are being neglected. When it comes to making decisions in the church, there is a council. I form part of this council as a woman. When we meet to make decisions for the church, my opinion is expected. What's your opinion about this? Should I be participating in this type of council?
Well, I would need to know more about the council, because if the council is the church, it depends on your church polity, what model you follow. If it leans more toward congregationalism, well, then that would be just perfectly in keeping with that. And sure, you can participate in those things. But if you are elder ruled, that would be out of line. If you're elder led, it would involve congregational activity if you happen to be an elder led church that believes in the priesthood of all believers and the kingdom of the keys, which means the congregation has responsibilities too. The congregation isn't just showing up on Sunday or maybe giving some money and volunteering whenever it makes sense or they're feeling like doing something in the nursery. No, that being a congregation member means that you have a responsibility too to make sure that theology is accurate. You're involved in church discipline issues. So you're a defender of truth and you are involved in the process of removing those who are besmirching the gospel. That all falls underneath the banner of the kingdom of the keys. So I wouldn't automatically say some sort of a council is necessarily a bad thing. But not having elders is a bad thing. Paul instructed Tim, appoint elders. That it needs that sort of leadership. And we see that right away in the book of Acts, don't we? The disciples are acting like elders. And then they assign deacons the work of the church, the service elements of the church. And then you have the congregation. And the elders are focusing on what? Teaching the word and prayer. And so we see also the qualification of elders, what they're supposed to be doing. And it's more than just preaching and teaching. It's instructing, it's rebuking, it's exhorting. It encompasses being, if you will, accountable for the souls of the sheep that the good shepherd has given to you to oversee. You need them. So I might encourage you to have your pastor, which is just another way of saying elder, do a study on it. What do we do with these verses that talk about the qualification of elders? Why don't we have elders if we're given the qualification of elders? Why did Paul tell Timothy to assign, to lay hands on elders in every town and challenge them on that? Because if you've got a church that's rudderless and it's led by a community, it doesn't mean it's heretical, but it's probably not going to be a very healthy place, at least not for long. 877, do it respectfully. Hey, pastor, I've been looking at this issue and could we talk about this? And could you explain why it is that we don't have what the Bible seems to me is pretty clearly prescribing? Would love to hear your thoughts on this. You can also assemble, you can marshal arguments for it, do a study on eldership yourself. You can find sermons if you want to give to him, probably won't listen to them, or any sort of books or treatments or articles, and bring it respectfully and share your thoughts. That is always the best approach. 877-282-2337.
All right. This is from Jay Shin. That's her name, Jay Shin. Todd, at what point do you think kissing should be allowed? Dating, engaged, or married?
This is interesting. Now, the name. How do you spell this person's name?
J-A-C-H-I-N.
Huh.
That's the way, like I needed to pronounce it.
Yeah. Well, the bad pronunciation aside, it seemed the reason that I'm focusing on it is because I do believe different cultures might influence how it is that an engaged couple deals with the physical element of their relationship. Because if you go to Italy and walk an arm in arm, that ain't no big thing. Holding hands, that's some culture. Even same sex does it in some cultures. We would never do that here, but they do it there. Is it wrong there? No. Is it right here? It's cultural. And so we need to be aware that when it comes to physical issues, culture does make a difference. Now, having said that, it's fascinating. Earlier this week, I'd shared, oh, this is perfect. I had shared from a book called Water Camels, How to Deal with Dating. And I don't think we talked about the physical element of dating, but it's contained in that book and I've got it marked up. So I'll run to my office and I'll share it next on Wretched Radio.